I have visited 200 churches.
Esmu apmeklējis 200 draugus.
And you start quicker than any other church I've ever visited. Now he's going to have a song and a prayer and introduction and all that. But the Latvians, they get down to business right away. I like that. Okay. So let me introduce myself a little bit. I've been a Christian for a bit over 40 years. Almost 41. I grew up maybe a little bit religious. But I was mainly just a marijuana smoking foolish person in high school.
Tomēr drīzāk es sevi raksturotu kā tādu muļķīgu jaunieti, kas mīlēja uzpīpēt marihuānu.
But then during my undergraduate I started to believe in God and I kind of searching for God.
Bet tad, kad es jau biju students, tad es sāku meklēt Dievu un sāku arī ticēt Dievam.
And then I was in graduate school when one of my students shared with me.
Un kad jau biju tuvāk universitātes nobeigumam, tad bija viens no maniem studentiem, respektīvi, kad jau biju pabeidzis pirmo diplomu un gatavojos kļūt par augstskolas mācību spēku, tad viens no studentiem man dalījās ticībā.
And so I was baptized. I got my doctorate degree in chemical physics.
Es kristījos un es kļuvu par doktoru, saņēmu doktora grādu ķīmiskajā fizikā.
I was married 35 years ago.
Pirms 35 gadiem apprecējos.
My three children are 33, 31 and 29.
Wow. Mani trīs bērni, 33, 31 un 29 gadu vecs.
People ask me, so you just started working for the church 6 months ago? Somebody said, so you just started working for the church 6 months ago? Well, actually, 33 years ago, for about a year and a half, I worked for the church. But then I got fired because I wasn't very good. I would have fired me also. Because I'm really a teacher. I'm not really an evangelist, I'm really a teacher. So after that, I've been just a chemistry professor and physics professor the whole time. Two of my children have been baptized, but one has not. So then I retired a little over a year ago. My plan was, I retired early for an American. And my plan was to just use that opportunity to serve God in greater ways. Writing more books, doing more teaching, creating more social media things. The thought of working to lead a church had never entered my mind at all. But then, almost a year ago, a friend of mine asked me to consider interviewing for a position. And I thought, well, I retired. Why would I want to work? But I believe retirement is not a time to rest. It says in Hebrews chapter 4 that our rest is in heaven, not now. So now I'm working harder than ever before. And the church has gone from 45 to 58 already. So it's been a blessing. All right, so I was asked to do a class about the reliability of the Bible. Honestly, I prefer the lesson I gave to the teens in campus. Because that lesson is more inspiring. There are two areas of Christian evidence. One area is Christian evidence that can be used to create faith. And in our evangelism. The other area of Christian evidence, it's really more for defending our faith. So nobody would be converted to Christ because of this lesson. That's why I like the first one. But then I think most of the parents of who was here earlier this afternoon, are here in the room right now. So you could help as well. So I want to talk about, can I trust the Bible? And there really are, there's more than one area here. One area is, how do I know the Bible that we have? Is the same as the Bible that was produced originally. And another question is, how do I know the books that are in the Bible, they're the right ones, the ones that God intended? And actually, there's really a third question. Do we have the right material? Do we have the right books? And then how do we know those books are really actually inspired? So I'm going to give material related to all three questions. So what about the New Testament? How do we know that what we have is reliable? These are some early manuscripts. I went to the Chester Beatty Museum. It's in Dublin. There's a whole room full of manuscripts like this. This is from 175 AD. Now, again, the purpose of this presentation is more to defend our belief than it is to create belief, okay?
Yeah.
So there are many criticisms you hear about the New Testament. People say, oh, you can't trust the New Testament. These books weren't even written until the second century. And besides, there were many, many different Gospels. And nobody was sure what the right one was. And then finally, one group won out. And just suppressed all the other ones. I hear this stuff all the time. And people say, the Bible we have, Constantine, he decided what was in the Bible. And it's because of Constantine that the Bible says Jesus is God. People say these kinds of things all the time. There was a movie, it was a few years ago, the Da Vinci Code. Maybe you saw that one. One quote was, almost everything our fathers taught us about Christ is false. A few years ago, the organization that I'm the president of put on a debate. And the opponent in the debate was somebody who says exactly this. Here's a quote from that book. Constantine turned Jesus into a deity. I'm telling you, at the universities, a lot of people believe this stuff. And they'll laugh at you. Oh, you're so ignorant. More than 80 Gospels were considered for the New Testament. By the way, I hope you're not nervous right now, because this is all nonsense.
Okay.
So we have different kinds of manuscripts. The earliest manuscripts were like this. I doubt there's a Latvian word. Uncial, I mean, whatever it is, just that word. And you look at how it, all capitals, no small letters, no spaces between the words, no punctuation, it just letter after letter until the very end. This partly explains why some of the copying errors happened. Then, after about the 5th century, you started to get capital and small letters. There were two kinds of materials the New Testament was recorded on. Papyrus, and then vellum. It's made out of lamb skin. And in the 1st or 2nd century, they began to make what's called a codex. Before that, it was a scroll. But then, and Paul even said, send the scrolls. But by the 2nd century, they had a codex. It'd be a long strip. And they'd fold it like this. And those were the first books. Okay. Here's the earliest confirmed manuscript of the New Testament. It's the Rylands fragment from 125 AD. It's in Manchester. I went to the Rylands Museum. for me, that is so exciting. I was like,
ļoti interesanti, ļoti satraucoši.
And you can see it's made of papyrus.
Un jūs redzat, ka tas ir sarakstīts uz papīra.
Now, vellum lasts a long time. But papyrus doesn't last very well at all. And the earliest manuscripts are all on papyrus. So it's really amazing how many we have from the early times. This is a segment of the book of John.
Šis ir gabaliņš no Jāņa evaņģēlijas.
From 150 AD.
No 150. Gada pēc Kristus.
Now remember, we already read that quote,
mēs jau lasījām šo citātu,
which says Constantine changed the New Testament.
Ar apgalvojumu, ka Konstantīns izmainīja jauno derību.
And so he made it like Jesus was a god.
Sanāktu tā, ka Jēzus bija Dievs.
But we have manuscripts from 150 AD,
bet, mums ir rokraksti no 150. Gada pēc Kristus,
which is 150 years before Constantine was even around.
Kas ir 150 gadus pirms, Konstantīna dzimšanas.
So if he wanted to change the New Testament,
tad, ja viņš būtu vēlējies izmainīt jauno derību,
he'd have to go back and find every single manuscript that was ever written.
Viņam būtu bijis jāatrod visi rokraksti, kas jebkad ir bijuši sarakstīti Bībeles.
And change them all.
Jāpārakst,
not only that,
but ne tikai tas,
we'd have to kill every single bishop in the New Testament church.
Viņam būtu bijis jānogalina, ik viens bīskaps, agrīnajā draudzē.
So I tell you this,
tādēļ es jums saku tā.
If somebody tried to change the New Testament,
ja kāds būtu gribējis izmainīt jaunās derības saturu,
every bishop would have died rather than let that happen. This is a monstrous lie. That no serious person could believe. All right, this is the Magdalene manuscript, which is in Oxford University. Again, it's just a fragment. It's written on both sides. That's why it's got Matthew 3:5 and also Matthew 3:26. Now, let me tell you this. It's not like we have the entire New Testament from the second century. At least not in the form of manuscripts. But we have a fairly significant minority. And then starting in the 4th century, we have entire Bibles. The Codex Sinaiticus is from 350 AD. And it's the entire Old and New Testament in Greek. These are the most famous by far. This one is in the Vatican. You can see why. This one was found in Alexandria. And this one was found in the Sinai. It's in the British Museum today. We have almost entire New Testament from 300 AD. And we have dozens of papyruses from between 150 and 250 AD. Dozens. This is from the Codex Sinaiticus. I was in the British Museum. I took the picture. And then the museum said, "Hey, what are you doing there?" Sorry. Too late. This is Codex Bezae from It says 350 there. Here I said 300. Somewhere between there. Okay, now, to give you an example of how much evidence we have in order to give us confidence of the New Testament, Aristotle, you've heard of Aristotle. Everybody knows about his writing. And when we read Aristotle, say translated from Greek, nobody ever questions the validity. Everybody assumes that it was written by Aristotle. But look at the amount of evidence we have. Only 5 ancient manuscripts in Greek. And the time difference between when it was written and our oldest manuscript,
Līdz vecākam rokrakstam, kas ir mūsu rīcībā,
1450 years.
1450 gadu.
How many times had it been copied and then copied and then copied and then copied? But nobody ever questions Aristotle's writings, never.
Aristotle raksts, cik reizi viņi ir tikuši pārakstīti un atkal pārakstīti un atkal pārakstīti. Un tāpat neviens nešaubās, ka jā, bet tas ir Aristotle rakstīts.
Everybody's heard of Julius Caesar. I took Latin in high school. Omnia Gallia est divisa in tres partes, whatever, okay.
Yeah.
And everybody knows that his Gallic Wars are written by Julius Caesar. But our total number of manuscripts in Latin are only 10. And the oldest manuscript is almost 1,000 years after the original. But nobody ever questions whether it's reliable. We could talk about Herodotus, the greatest Greek historian. Or whoever you want to talk about, okay? Then there's the New Testament. We have roughly 8,000 manuscripts. And the oldest one comes from 50 years after it was written. Actually, it's closer to 40 years. People say, oh, it's not reliable. In the 19th century, the liberal critics of the Bible, they promised the New Testament was written until the 2nd century. That can explain why it's not very reliable. But they don't say that anymore. Okay, let's talk about the authority. I mean, how did the New Testament get formed into its current form of 27 books? Remember that quote about 80 different Gospels? That's just an absolute lie. There were Justin Martyr. By the way, that's not his last name. That's what happened to him. He wrote that there were 4, he called them memoirs. Irenaeus, 190 AD.
Irenaeus, 190 gads pēc Kristus.
He identified the four. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. He said they're the four pillars of the church. So I'm going to give you a little bit more evidence. But let me explain how the New Testament came to its present form. The books that are in our New Testament were chosen because it was the consensus in the beginning of the second century that these books had apostolic authority. In other words, living apostles identified to the church that these were inspired and authoritative. I'm saying that because that's what the evidence says. The four Gospels are the only ones that were ever considered. You know those other Gospels? First of all, they're not even Gospels. You've heard of the Gospel of Thomas? It's not a Gospel. It doesn't include the birth of Jesus. It doesn't include any miracles of Jesus. Except when he was a tiny baby. It doesn't include the death of Jesus or the resurrection of Jesus or any of his parables. And in the Gospel of Thomas, Jesus says that Mary, God had to turn Mary into a man. Otherwise, she would go to hell. And you know, it's interesting. It's true that many other books were written, like fake gospels. These came from the Gnostics. But what's interesting is, even they didn't put them in their canons.
But the Gnostics to neiekļāva kanonā.
There's a famous Gnostic teacher from the second century. His name was Marcion. And he didn't include any of the other books.
Un viņš nevienu no šīm grāmatām,
even the Gnostics weren't willing to say that these belong in the Bible. And then we have these liberal theologians from the 20th century saying that they were considered for inclusion. But there is exactly this much evidence to support that. There have been four Gospels. Since the time John wrote his Gospel, there have been four Gospels. All right. Now, let's talk about the evidence supporting the reliability of the New Testament. And the fact that it has not been changed significantly. And also, how early these books were considered authoritative. This comes from the quotes of early church leaders. Ignatius,
Ignatius,
in 115 A.D., he quotes from Matthew, John, and Luke.
Cite Mateju, Jāni un Lūku.
And several other New Testament books.
Un arī daudz citas jaunās derības grāmatas.
Polycarp,
Polycarp,
120 A.D.
120. Gadā pēc Kristus.
He quotes from all of these New Testament books.
Cite no visām šīm Lūk jaunās derības grāmatām.
Clement of Rome,
Clementis no Romas, Romas Clements.
In the first century,
pirmajā gadsimtā,
he quotes from 10 of the 27 New Testament books.
Cite 10 no 27 jaunās derības grāmatām.
Now this is just in a letter that he wrote.
Tas ir vienkārši vienā vēstulē, ko viņš uzrakstīja.
So think about a letter that you wrote.
Padomājiet par kādu no savām vēstulēm, ko jūs rakstāt.
In the typical letter that you write,
tādā caurmēr jūsu vēstulē.
How many New Testament books do you quote from?
Cik jūs citējat jaunās derības grāmatas?
This is just in one letter.
Tas ir vienā vēstulē.
And if you read the letter Clement wrote, he quotes extensively from the Old Testament. And when he quotes from the New Testament, he uses it the same way he uses the Old Testament. So in other words, what this proves is at least in the case of Clement, who was the bishop of Rome at that time, these were already part of the canonical New Testament. In fact, it's been said, and a friend challenged me on that one time, because, you know, people always say stuff, and everybody says it, then everybody starts to believe it. So I did some research to confirm. If you take quotes just from the second and third century, you can reproduce almost the entire New Testament.
Tad jūs varat reproducēt ar šiem, šo citās pamatas, visu veco derību, visu jaunu derību.
So what if somebody changed the New Testament?
Tad, kas notikt, ja kāds sagrozītu jauno derību?
For example, even in Codex Sinaiticus,
piemēram, pat Codex Sinaiticus,
there are a few copying errors and some small questions.
Ir daži pārrakstīšanas kļūdas, kur var rasties.
And one of the reasons we know that
zinām,
is because we have so many quotes from before that manuscript.
Jo mums ir tik daudz citātu, kas ir jau vēl senāka datējuma.
None of these
neviens no tiem
ever quoted from any other gospel.
Nekad necitēja nevienu no šiem citiem tā saucamiem evaņģēliem.
Except Irenaeus,
izņemot Irenaeus,
who wrote a book in the 180s. The title was Against the Heresies, in which he quotes some of these things to show how foolish they are. All right, so what about the canon? What the word canon? It comes from the Hebrew word for a ruler. So the canon of Scripture then is those which are within the measurement or something like that. I don't know. So we have what's called the Muratorian fragment. And it lists the books in the New Testament about 170 A.D.
Tajā ir jaunās derības grāmatas uzskaitīts, un tas ir no apmēram 170. Gadā.
And it doesn't include Matthew.
Un tur trūkst Mateja evaņģēlija.
Because the manuscript is ripped.
Jo rokraksts šis papīrs ir ieplīsis.
But?
Bet.
It does not include Hebrews.
Tur arī trūkst ebreji.
Or James.
Un Jēkab.
Or 1st and 2nd Peter.
Un arī pirmās, otrās Pēteras grāmatas.
So are you about to lose your faith? I'm going to summarize the information in a little bit. Another one, that I mentioned this guy, his name was Marcion earlier. And he gave a list. And he didn't like Paul at all. So he didn't include any of Paul's books. But anyway, basically his list agrees with ours except he didn't like Paul. And that was around 140 AD. And it partially explains why the Christians started to write down that list. So here's what the facts say. A collection of what we call Paul's letters. Romans, 1st and 2nd Corinthians, Galatians. They were circulating. In the churches by the 90s AD. There's some question about whether 1st and 2nd Timothy, Titus and Philemon were in that collection that was circulating in
98.
Also, the four Gospels were being circulated like together by the 90s. The evidence is overwhelming that this is the case. Then a fluid, that means not, it's like concrete that is not set yet. Okay? List of books, 150 AD. So by 150 AD, everyone pretty much agreed. There were three or four books, which some people said definitely, and others said maybe. That's 150 AD. All right, I don't think I know. Yes. By 200 AD, the New Testament that we now use was fixed. In 190 AD, Irenaeus lists all 27 in the same order that we have today. All right, so there you go. Now, as late as 220 AD, Origen admitted some people discussed Hebrews and Revelation. It's true they discussed it, but actually everybody had the same list. Okay, good. That's enough there. So here's the summary. The New Testament was selected by consensus. Of the church as a whole. In the second century. Based on apostolic authority.
balstīts uz apostolisks autoritātes.
Point number two. The evidence says the Greek New Testament that we have is virtually identical to the original writings. I say virtually identical. And there's a few minor questions. By the way, just so you know, there were three or four passages that were included in the King James Version. For example, part of 1 John chapter 5. And John 7, 50-something through chapter 8. The story of the woman caught in adultery. And then one verse in John, the thing about the angel stirring the water. These were things that were added. Like from the 5th century or the 7th century. But that's not a problem. Because we have manuscripts that tell us that. Now, people say there's 100,000 errors in the New Testament. But that's because there's 8,000 manuscripts. And, you know, there's spelling errors. Sometimes they'll have a line repeated twice. Sometimes they'll skip a line. But we have 8,000 manuscripts. Plus we have hundreds and hundreds of quotes from the early church fathers. So we have virtually exactly the original writings from the Greek New Testament. There's a tiny fraction of doubt. Something like 1 or 2/10 of a percent. One word here, one word there. Where the manuscripts, it's not for sure. But none of those have any effect at all on any important Christian teaching. Now remember those quotes that Constantine changed the New Testament. There was all these different Gospels. It's all been changed. Muslims say that our New Testament is corrupted. If you go to Muslim websites, you see it all the time. But then you ask, like, give me an example. Because according to Islam, Jesus was not crucified. So do they have a copy of the New Testament that doesn't include the crucifixion? How corrupt do they think the New Testament would be, you know? When Muslims are trying to prove the New Testament is corrupt, therefore the Quran could be true, what they're saying is, I don't know what to say. All right, what about the Old Testament? Here's a piece of Psalms from the Dead Sea Scrolls. What about the Old Testament?
Kā ar veco derību?
Well, until the 1940s,
līdz 40 gadiem,
the oldest manuscripts we had were from about 900 AD.
Vissenākie rokraksti, vecās derības atcerētos, kas mums bija? Bija no apmēram 900. Gada pēc Kristus.
The Aleppo Codex.
Aleppo Codex.
The Leningrad Codex.
Leningrads Codex.
Remember, I said that we had the Septuagint,
atceries, es teicu, ka mums bija Septuaginta,
which is the entire Old Testament,
kas bija visa vecā derība,
from the 4th century.
No 4. Gadsimta.
But that's in Greek.
Bet tas ir grieķu valodā.
Now, the Jews had a law.
Un, jūdiem bija tāds, pauses likums.
And it said whenever a manuscript was worn out,
proti, kāds rokraksts, kāds rakstrītuls bija nodilis,
they had to burn it.
Tas ir jāsatrecina.
They couldn't throw it into the trash.
Tu nedrīkst vienkārši izmest.
And they couldn't bury it.
Tu nedrīkst vienkārši aprakst.
So that's why we don't have very many Hebrew manuscripts. Because in that area, the Jews apparently obeyed their Pharisees. But that's a lot of time. From 450 B.C.
to
900 A.D. That's a long time. Honestly, there could have been a lot of change over that time. But those Jewish scribes, they were crazy. Think about the biggest perfectionist you ever met. This person is such a perfectionist. They drive you crazy. The scribes were 100 times worse than that. I don't know if we have time to read all this. They had so many rules. The ink has to be black. No word, letter, or even accent. Could be written from memory.
So,
Aleph. And then next letter. And then next letter. The Jews knew how many letters there were in the entire Old Testament. They knew the middle letter of the entire Old Testament. They knew how many times each letter in the Old Testament appeared in the entire Old Testament. They knew the middle verse of the Old Testament. They knew the middle verse of each book. And I could go on and on and on. And their rule was this. If there's one mistake, you burn it. Do you have any idea how long it took to make one of these? Now, they only did one scroll at a time, right? They said between every consonant, the width of a hair, between every word, the breadth of a consonant, between every book, three lines. They had to wear full Jewish dress. Wash their whole body. These guys were crazy. All right. Other reasons to believe the reliability of the Old Testament. Now we have the thing called the Masoretic text. These were produced by these scribes that are called Masoretes. They were following rules like this. And they did something in the 9th century AD. These Jewish scribes collected all the manuscripts they had. And there was a fairly significant amount of variety, some differences here and there. And they did what modern scholars do. They took all the evidence to create the best possible Hebrew manuscript. Thank you. But then they burned all the other ones. So that didn't help because it eliminated some of the possible evidence. But we have other evidence. We have the Septuagint. This is the translation from Hebrew to Greek in the 3rd century B.C. So it's like a snapshot. So, for example, you could look at me and you could try to imagine what I looked like when I was 2 years old. Or you could look at a snapshot of when I was 2 years old. And that's what the Septuagint is like. Then we have the Dead Sea Scrolls. We have actual manuscripts. Because like I said, there's that 1,400-year gap. That's a long gap. But then in 1947, a shepherd boy threw a rock into a cave. That's what boys do. The parents say, don't throw a rock off that cliff, but they do it anyway. And he heard pottery shattering. So the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered. The biggest amount was in cave number 4. Thousands and thousands of manuscripts. Most on papyrus. One of them was even on copper. Different materials. A lot of it was from this sect of Judaism. We know them as the Essenes. But a lot of them were Old Testament. That's the Isaiah scroll. Now, here's what it did. Here's the result. Before the Dead Sea Scrolls, the gap was 1,400 years. After the Dead Sea Scrolls, about 250 years. 300 years at the most. So we covered 80% of the gap. And if you look at the book of Isaiah in the Dead Sea Scrolls,
esejas, grāmatas.
Only a few minor differences between the one in the Masoretic text.
Ir tikai dažas nelielas atšķirības no Masoretu teksta.
I'm not saying it's identical.
Es nesaku, kur ir identisks.
Because there are a lot of copying errors.
Jo ir daudz pārrakstīšanas kļūdu.
And I'm not going to say the Hebrew Old Testament is almost exactly the same. I'd say it's significantly the same. For example, which one is the error? First one or the second one? Which one was a mistake? First one or the second one? Which one was a mistake? First one, okay. Which one is a mistake? There's no way to know. So, honest truth? Numbers in the Old Testament are not very reliable. Honestly, there's actually quite a few potential errors. Also, names. Is it Nebuchadnezzar or Nebuchadrezzar? But does that matter? Also, the Jews used letters for numbers, kind of like the Roman numerals. And some of those letters, they're awfully similar.
All
right, so the honest truth is, there are, in the Old Testament, the Hebrew Old Testament, I can't say 99.8% accurate. Because that would be an exaggeration. All right, but we have other evidence. We have Jewish writings like the Talmud, the Mishnah, many, many Jewish writings. According to the Talmud, which is a Jewish writing of the first and second century, it says that Ezra chose the books in the Old Testament. I don't know for sure. Josephus, you might have heard of Josephus. He said, we don't have 10,000 books. We have only 22. Now, you're nervous, right? Because everybody knows how many books there are in the Old Testament, right? All right. But for the Jews, the 12 minor prophets, they counted that as one. First and Second Chronicles, they counted that as one. And Ezra and Nehemiah, they counted that as one. So these 22 books, those are exactly our 37 books. And by the way, in the New Testament, every Old Testament book is quoted.
Ikviena no vecās derības grāmatām tiek citēta.
Except Esther.
Izņemot Esteru.
And you probably know the Jews had all kinds of other writings.
Un jūs varbūt zināt, ka ebrejiem bija visādi citi raksti.
You've probably heard of the Apocrypha, right?
Es dzirdēju par apokrifiem.
Guess how many times the Apocrypha is quoted in the New Testament?
Miniet, cik reizi ir citēti apokrifi jaunajā derībā?
Zero times.
Nulle.
One time in the book of Jude, he doesn't quote the Apocrypha. He does quote another Jewish book.
grāmatu.
It's not exactly a quote.
Tas nav tā īsti pat citāts.
But he mentions something that's found in there.
Bet viņš atcels kaut ko, kas skan līdzīgi tam.
Now, some people say a group of Jews in the end of the first century decided what the canon was going to be.
Well,
that is false, absolutely. Because we have a record of that meeting. And all they did was agree that Ecclesiastes belongs in the Old Testament. And Song of Solomon belongs in the Old Testament. But they're already quoted by Jesus and the Jews all the time. All right, so here's my conclusion. The canon of the Old Testament was set by the Jewish rabbis or Jewish teachers. Probably by 300 BC. Because that would precede the Septuagint. But, you know, I want to be a little bit more careful. And say definitely by 200 BC. And the Hebrew and Aramaic texts of the Old Testament is remarkably close to the original. Notice I didn't say almost identical. Because I don't want to exaggerate. Okay, so that's that. Other evidence to help us have confidence in the Old Testament. How many of you have read the Old Testament Apocrypha?
All
right. At Judith, Tobit, Wisdom, Second Maccabees, First Maccabees. If you want to know what an inspired book looks like, read one of those books. The things in there are so obviously different. They're like fantasies. People say, oh, in the New Testament, they told all these myths about Jesus that he didn't really do his miracles. We have apocryphal New Testament books. And you read those, and you go, how could anybody believe that? For example, in the Gospel of Thomas, Jesus, as a little tiny baby, he turns clay birds into actual birds. And he speaks from his cradle to Mary and tells her he's the Messiah. Who could believe this stuff? So if you want to understand what it means to have an inspired book, read the competitors. And you'll say, the Old Testament Apocrypha, I could say stuff about that. I'll just say, if you have questions, ask me later. All right, further evidence to support the reliability of the Bible is archaeology. People say, it's just a bunch of stories.
nu, tur tikai tādi visādi stāsti.
Most of the Old Testament was written around 400 BC.
Lielākā daļa vecās derības tika sarakstīta 400. Gadu priekš Kristus.
Just fables and fantasies and a bunch of stories.
Nu, tur leģendas, fantāzijas, fabulas, visādi stāsti.
Nobody could take them seriously. The idea that Moses existed is almost certainly not true. And the idea that he wrote the book of Leviticus is ridiculous. David, there was no such person as David. Everybody knows that. The Hittites? You know, just a bunch of stories. That's what the critics said. Until archaeological evidence started coming up. By the way, this is Jehu. And this is Shalmaneser. So, I think Jehu was a real person. His name is in the inscription. So, the critics say he's not a real person. Shalmaneser says he is. I believe it. Now, what about the Old Testament? Now, let's think about the story of the Jewish people.
Kāds ir jūdu tautas stāsts?
All the way from the time, let's say, Abraham.
No Abrama laikiem.
All the way to the end of the Old Testament.
Līdz vecās derības beigām.
When would you start to see buildings and architecture that would reflect what's written in the Old Testament?
Kad varētu, no kuru laiku varētu būt ēkas, kas atspoguļo to, kas ir rakstīts vecajā derībā?
The answer is not until the time of David.
No Dāvida laika.
So if you were to go to Egypt,
tātad, ja jūs, piemēram, apciemosiet Ēģipti,
and start digging around,
un sāksiet tur rakt,
let's say 1600 BC,
teiksim, 1600 gads priekš Kristus,
what could you find?
Ko jūs tur atrast?
Some huts?
Nu, tur ir kaut kādas mājas, koka.
What about Abraham?
Kā ar Abraham?
Are we going to ever find something that he wrote down?
Vai mēs atradīsim kaut ko, ko Abrahams ir rakstījis?
What did he live in?
Kāds bija viņa mājoklis?
A tent.
Tā bija telts.
Do you think we'll be able to find his tent?
Ten šit, vai viņa telts tiks atrasta?
So when you're looking for evidence of archaeology related to the Old Testament,
tad, ja mēs meklējam pierādījumus, arheoloģisks pierādījums vecās derības stāstiem.
Before David,
pirms Dāvida,
the evidence could only be indirect.
Varbūt tikai netieši pierādījumi.
But after David, you should begin to see some direct evidence.
Bet sākot no Dāvida, jau var redzēt tiešus pierādījumus.
Which, by the way, is exactly what happens.
Un tieši tā arī ir.
For example, I cannot prove that Abraham existed.
Piemēram, es nevaru pierādīt, ka Abrahams dzīvoja.
What would you even look for?
Nu, ko tu tur vispār meklēt?
But the Bible says he came from Ur.
The Bible teica, ka viņš nāca no Ur.
It describes Ur as a very large and wealthy city. There is the ziggurat, the pyramid, basically. And Ur was the largest city in Mesopotamia at that time.
Un tajā laikā Ura bija Mesopotāmijas lielākā pilsēta.
And then Abraham went to Haran.
Un tad Abrahams devās.
It seems like a more obscure city, kind of on the... Yeah, more obscure city, kind of on the frontier.
Tā ir pilsēta, par ko mazāk zināms, tā pierobežas pilsēta, Haran.
There it is. Northwestern part of Mesopotamia in Syria.
Mesopotamijas ziemeļ rietumu daļa, Sīrijā.
Northern Syria, near Turkey. This city was abandoned about 1500 BC. Let's just imagine
iedomāsimies.
A Jewish person sitting in his study, let's say 600 BC.
Ebrejs ap 600. Gadu priekš Kristus.
So he's just making up this story.
Viņš tad visu to tikai izdomā.
So he's going to include a city that hadn't even existed for almost 1,000 years? Is that your story? Okay, and then there's the Ebla tablets. This is from right around 2000 BC, right around 2000 BC. Now, you're not going to find, you know, Bible characters here. But some of the names listed in Ebla tablets include Nahor, Terug, Abraham, Abram, and Sarai. By the way, that's not the Bible characters. That's just a typical name of people living in Mesopotamia at the time that Nahor and Sarug. So think in the Latvian language. Think of a name that's only just recently. 100 years ago, nobody would have ever used that name. So if you see that name, you know when that letter came from. Or imagine you find a letter from 300 years ago in Latvia. And you look at those names. That's from 300 years ago. This is evidence that actually Abraham and Sarai and all these guys lived around 2000 BC in Mesopotamia. Remember I said, before David, it can only be indirect evidence. Actually, no, I didn't say that. I said, before David, I'm sorry, I switched direction. All right. Here's an interesting one. In Genesis 14, verse 2, it says that Abraham took part in a battle, including the five kings from the Dead Sea, against this guy, Chedorlaomer from Elam. Some guy. So, five cities on the Dead Sea? In fact, in Genesis it says, Abraham, in the area that we think of as Israel, said, no, he got the good land. Down there by the dead, down by the Dead Sea. Of course, the skeptics, they laughed at this one. How ridiculous could anybody believe this stuff? I've been there a couple times. It is one of the most desolate places on earth. But then about 30 years ago, some archaeologists said, well, let's just go look and see what we found. Guess how many cities they found? Five. Now, this is 2100 BC. Now, it was not some kind of lush jungle. In fact, it was quite dry. But they had rivers that ran And there were five of them.
Bija piecas šādas upes.
And so they had irrigation.
Un bija apūdeņošana.
And very intense agriculture.
Un diezgan arī lauksaimniecība intensīva.
All five of those cities
visas piecas šīs pilsētas
were destroyed roughly 2100 BC.
Tika iznīcinātas apmēram 2100. Gadā priekš Kristus.
By fire.
Ugunī.
And never occupied again.
Un nekad tur neviens vairs nav dzīvojis.
What one interesting fact?
Viens interesants fakts.
This one is probably Sodom.
Šī ir domājams Sodom.
I think I have the, yeah, these are the ruins from Sodom.
Look, Sodom's grupas.
Anyway, outside of Sodom,
Sodom's,
there was a cemetery.
Bija kapsēta,
and they had these little, like, wooden structures. And when they burned,
kad viņas sadeda,
they burned from the top to the bottom.
No augšu uz leju.
Now, normally, when you burn down a city,
it
burns from the bottom to the top. But these burn from the top to the bottom. Now, what does the Bible said happened to Sodom and Gomorrah? Now, this is not proof. Be cautious. Don't claim too much. But you know what I'm talking about, right? Okay, and they said Hittites, Hivites, Jebusites, Girgashites, so kind of like the Book of Mormon, you know, Moroni and all these things. The Hittites are mentioned 47 times in the Old Testament. But the liberal skeptic said, there's no Hittites. Then Hugo Winkler discovered the city of Hattusha. Winkler. He's a German archaeologist. It was the capital of a very large empire. The three chief powers, 1000 BC, were Egypt,
Assyria,
and the Hittites, in an area we'd call Turkey, basically. So I believe in the Hittites. I also believe in the Hivites and the Jebusites. And they're Girgashites. Can I prove the Girgashites? No. But they said there is no Hittites. There's the gate of this city. There are universities where you can get a major in Hittite studies. I'm starting to believe the Bible's actually reliable. This is a letter from the 1400s BC. It wasn't found in Palestine, it was found in a city in Egypt. It's El Amarna. And what it is, it's coming from, there are several of these. They're coming from a local leaders in Palestine. Look at this one. It says, the Habiru are plundering all the lands of the king. It says, send archers. Archers. Sorry.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the king's land will be lost. Now, who do you think these hapiru might be?
Kas bija šie hapiru?
It's from the 15th century BC.
Tas ir no 15. Gadsimta pirms Kristus.
Now, people will say, there is no archaeological evidence at all for the Jews being in Egypt. It's true. But what would you find? A bunch of slaves. They say there's no archaeological evidence of them wandering through the wilderness.
Runātāri, kad nav arheoloģisku pierādījumu, ka ebreji būtu caur tūkstnešiem klīduši.
It's true.
Arī tā ir taisnība.
But what would you find? I mean,
bet ko tur varētu atrast?
How would you even know it?
Kā varētu, ko varētu vispār atrast?
So, lack of evidence,
tātad, ja nav pierādījumu,
in that case,
šajā gadījumā,
doesn't prove anything.
Neko nepierāda.
But we have these things. I don't know. It works for me. All right. I'll skip that one. This is from Egypt. In the 13th century BC. And somewhere, I don't know where, somewhere on there. It lists the Israel. Occupying, the promised land. All right, this is found, it's called the Moabite stone. Because it was found in Moab. You've heard of Moab, right? There's Edom and Moab and Ammon, right? All right, and it mentions Ahab of the house of Omri. Now, according to the Bible, Omri killed the former king, and he started a dynasty that included Ahab. So now I believe it. Actually, I already believed it. Because here's the fact. The Bible is by far the most reliable ancient document in terms of history. If you read the histories of the Assyrians or the ancient Babylonians or the Egyptians, they never lost the battle. Well, somebody must have lost a battle at least once. Then you read the Old Testament. They lost more battles than they won.
All
right, this is the Tel Dan inscription. This means hill. There are actually two cities called Dan. You can read it in the Bible. This is the one in the north. I was there last October. They found this stone. A good friend of mine, his name is John Wilson. He was there in that city that day. He told me he walked right by that stone. Because what happened in the ancient world? They'd destroy a city, and then they'd build a new one out of the stones. So this is just a rock in a wall somewhere. But that evening, an archaeologist was walking by, and the sun was at this angle. Here's what it says. This is the king of Aram speaking. He says, I killed Jehoram, son of Ahab, king of Israel, and I killed Ahaziah, son of Jehoram,
Ahaz, Jehoram's dēlu,
king of the house of David.
Tēniņu no Dāvida nama.
So what does this establish?
Ko tas pierāda?
Yes, there was a king named David.
Jā, bija tas ķēniņš vārdā Dāvids.
Yes, he was the very first.
Jā, viņš bija pats pirmais.
As of a series of kings.
Tēniņu,
that lasted for more than 200 years.
Tas valdīja vairāk kā 200 gadu.
Now it says, I killed Jehoram. All right, and I killed Ahaziah. Now the Bible says that he killed Jehoram, but he only wounded Ahaziah. And Jehu killed Ahaziah. I'm going to ask you a very simple question. Which is more believable? That he killed Ahaziah? Or that he wounded him? And he was killed by Jehu? That's a really easy question. The biblical account is more reliable. It always is. Okay, just a couple more. Here's Jehu. I already mentioned that. You know, it's kind of frustrating because there are no statues of Jewish kings, not a single one. And not even carvings like this. Why not? Because God said not to do that. The Jews hardly obeyed any commandments. I think the only two commandments they obeyed were to not make these statues and to multiply and fill the earth. They did okay on that one. So this is from Shalmaneser. And that's Jehu. Now, 2 Kings 17 says that Jehu paid tribute, paid a tax, essentially. It doesn't say that he actually bowed down. So did he or did he not? The answer is, I really don't know. Because this could be sort of symbolic. Or it could be this really happened. I don't know. All right, here's a good one. I like this one. This is from 691 BC.